MacCast, Friday, June 7th, 2013. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is a show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the show. Well, we are here to continue the episode that we started last time. I've been talking to a bunch of very smart folks in the Mac and podcasting community about WWDC, but what we're not doing is actually doing predictions. What I wanted to do was get a bunch of people on and talk to them about the things that we want Apple to be working on, not necessarily what's going to be announced, but the sorts of things that we think Apple might have in their radar, the things that they might be working on. And on a more personal note, really the stuff that we would hope would be coming and being announced from Apple. So sort of being in charge, and maybe if we had been able to sort of coordinate and tell the engineers what projects we wanted them to focus on over the past year leading up to WWDC, what we would have had them doing, and then what we would have announced at the upcoming event, which happens on Monday. Tim Cook is actually going to be getting up on stage and doing a keynote. I have not heard yet if Apple is going to be streaming it. They probably aren't. It's not typically something that they do, but they have on occasion. So they usually announce that at the sort of last minute. But if not, there's going to be a lot of coverage online, a lot of people live blogging. I know the Mac Observer is doing some live blogging, so if you want to follow along there. I myself, I'm going to be on vacation, which is why you're getting this episode a little bit earlier than usual. And I will not be doing a show next week, so just make a note of that. And we'll be back after that to run down everything that was announced at WWDC and talk about all that sort of stuff. So I've got a number of great interviews lined up for you again in this episode. We're going to be talking to Chuck Joyner as well as Ewan Rankin and Brian Chaffin from the Mac Observer. So hang in for those interviews. But before we get into that, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is ShareFile by Citrix. You know, sharing documents, when you are working, sharing documents is a huge thing. It's something you're going to be doing every day. And whether you're sharing documents with coworkers or clients, it's the sort of thing that you need to be reliable. You need it to be secure. You need it to be easy. You could be sharing things like contact information or files that you're working on in a project, spreadsheets, presentations. And it's essential that you know that those files get to the people that they need to get to, that they have the information they need to work with, and that it's secure and that you're in control of all of it. And that's why I really recommend you give ShareFile by Citrix a try. It's a really easy to use business solution that allows you to share your files quickly and securely. For me, exchanging files with my clients is something that I do frequently, and one thing I particularly love about ShareFile is that it lets me set up a branded experience. So there's lots of options out there, but what I love about ShareFile's solution is that I simply send my client a link to something that I've placed in a project folder for them, say, and then all they have to do is click that link. They're taken to a page with my logo and my branding. It even has a customized URL, and they can download it. So it's a very professional experience, and I can set it up so that I get a notification so that I know they've downloaded the file. I know that they've received it. It's all done over secure SSL connections, so it's got the security taken care of. And another great feature, and this is critical for my kind of businesses, very often I need clients to be able to send me a file, and they're typically larger files than you can send through email. So once again, I can go into ShareFile, I can request the file from them, that generates a link that I can send to them in an email. They click on that link, they land on my customized page, and they just simply upload the file through their browser. No hassle, no mess, no fuss. It just works. And that's the kind of solution you want when you're dealing with this sort of stuff. You know, ShareFile lets you send files of almost any size because, unlike email, it's not restricted. to just a few megabytes. You're not going to get the kinds of bounce backs that you can with email. And when you get bounce backs, that's wasted time. That's wasted energy. You're having to go back and forth. You don't want to deal with that. Plus, you can have granular control. You can control who has access to those files. There's different levels of permissions. So it goes above and beyond sort of other services that are out there. And you can sync your files automatically. So if you have a team, you can set up syncing so that everybody has updated information, updated materials when and where they need it, because you can also access those files through ShareFile anywhere. You can do it on your laptop, your tablet, your smartphone. You can really work on the go. And so many of us are doing that these days too. You're needing to be able to access files when you're not at the office, when you're at a conference, when you're someplace else, and you can get the information when and where you need it. So that's why I want you to give ShareFile a try. You can sign up today for free, get a 30-day free trial, no obligation. You just go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter the code MACCAST. Remember, that's ShareFile.com, and type in the code MACCAST. And a big thank you to ShareFile and Citrix for their support of the MACCAST. So now we're going to jump in to our interviews, but one little thing before that, I had asked you for some of your feedback, some of your thoughts on what you're hoping to see at the WWDC conference, what you think might be announced, and just share your thoughts. And I got some feedback from a few of you. I was hoping to get some audio comments, but we haven't received any of those yet. If you do have something to add to the conversation, I would love to get some audio to play on a future episode of the MACCAST. It's going to have to happen after my vacation now, but I, you know, after you hear us talking about it, this is really about what we want as a community. So I invited some friends of mine on to talk on this episode, but I also want to hear from you. So shoot an audio comment, call in on the listener hotline. I think the hotline limits you to 2 minutes. If you want to send me an audio comment, you can record something in GarageBand or use the voice recorder on your iPhone, your iPod Touch. Record up a message. 3 to 5 minutes is probably a good range, and we'll try and share those with everyone when I get back. But some of the feedback I received, Anthony sent me an email, and he pointed out the fact that, you know, we talk about this long delay in Apple updating their software, updating their products, and he was smart to point out the changeover, the management changeover that happened when Scott Forstall left the company and Tim Cook put critical Apple executives in charge of key pieces of everything with all the projects that Apple is working on. And he was smart to put someone at the top who is going to oversee both sides of what Apple does in terms of hardware and software. So the desktop devices as well as the mobile devices. So you got, for example, Craig Federighi in charge of both operating systems, and you have Jonathan Ive doing the user interface on both sides. And he said, you know, the Apple probably just wanted some more time to sort of undo. Anthony really saw Forstall as possibly creating silos within Apple, sort of separating things. And Cook has been talking a lot recently and making a number of comments that really the intersection of all the software and services and hardware, all that stuff coming together, is going to be critical to Apple moving forward. And so this delay is probably Apple going through the restructuring, getting everything back in order, and trying to bring the separations that had been sort of occurring back together. They're patching things up, which is an interesting perspective, and I think a very logical one. It seems to be the direction that Apple is moving in. I also received a couple comments about different hardware upgrades, different things you'd like to see. Greg sent me an email, and he said he'd really like to see Apple put an SD card reader in the iPad for specifically for photography. That is one that I think would be nice, although I don't think is typically something Apple would do. They don't like having the extra ports if they're sticking to the Steve Jobs vision. So I guess that one for me has to do with, is Apple sticking hard to Steve Jobs' vision of design? I think with someone like Jonathan Ive in charge of the design aesthetics, he's not going to let another little port get in there. They have the teeny tiny Thunderbolt port now, and I think if they could make it even smaller, they would go for that or even move to purely wireless stuff. We talked a little bit about maybe getting some new ways to transfer files on and off the iPad wirelessly. We're hearing that they might be rolling in the AirDrop support, so who knows if that happens. Greg also commented on the iWork updates and the fact that a lot of the software seems stuck with current versions, but he also was right to point out that you know, there are a lot of updates that come out in between those big versions with some pretty significant new features, and that maybe we don't need to have software coming out as quickly, and that we're getting a little bit obsessed with the version numbers. It's not about the version numbers, it's about the features and functionality. And so if the applications are working and working for most of Apple's users and doing the job well, then do we really need them piling on a bunch of new features that maybe a lot of us don't take advantage of? So as geeks, I think, Greg, you're right. We want to have the latest and greatest. We want to have all kinds of new features and functionality, and we sometimes get caught up in that. And then the last one I wanted to talk to you about is I received an email from James, and he said something very interesting. He said he'd like to see the 11-inch MacBook Air, but with a larger screen, maybe a 12 to 12.5-inch screen, something that would fit in the same physical dimensions as the current 11-inch MacBook Air, and just Apple reducing the bezel around the screen to kind of fit that in there. He also mentioned maybe taking the 13-inch MacBook Pro and allowing us to get more RAM into that, a better processor. I think those sorts of things are going to come. He was also thinking that maybe if Apple could up and get a discrete GPU in the 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro, that would be something he'd be interested in. The thing about those two suggestions, James, is I think that Apple has the 13-inch MacBook Air, so you're getting kind of close. I guess they could simplify the line down to a single unit, especially if they could get a larger screen in the same physical dimensions as that notebook exists now. And also, he mentioned possibly Retina coming into play. That has always been this issue of battery life, but as James pointed out in his email, the new Haswell chips are extremely power efficient. We talked about that, I think, on a recent episode of the MacCast, 50% energy savings according to Intel. So if the new chips are using up less power and they have better integrated GPUs, maybe we could see Retina displays showing up in some of the new MacBook Air notebooks. That would be a cool thing to see. And he also said he really would like to see Apple, as Katie Floyd mentioned in the last episode, update and do some updates to the Apple TV box. Not necessarily do a full-size TV, but really expand the features and functionality, I think especially on the software side of the Apple TV. And I think we'd all like to see that. We'd like to see maybe Apple doing some more deals with the different networks for content, whether that means a true television streaming service, something that maybe we can replace our cable boxes with. That would be very interesting. Not something, you know, as we're talking about here, that we all think is going to happen at necessarily at this WWDC keynote coming up on Monday, but things that we would like to see Apple working on for the future. So thanks to all of you who have sent in your feedback, and I look forward to receiving more of that and sharing that on future episodes. But for now, let's jump in to our interviews. Well, now I'm joined by Chuck Joyner from Mac Voices, also another member of the Mac Roundtable. Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
I'm good, Adam. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you for coming on to do this little experiment, a little bit of dreaming about what we want Apple to sort of be working on. So what is the sort of the one thing that you would, if you were in charge, you would hope they'd be talking about here at WWDC?
You know, Adam, boy, there are a lot of things, I guess, if I had the...
I'm going to limit you to one, though. Maybe a couple ancillary ones, but...
Well, no, actually, I think I can do it in just one, and that is that I think that Apple really needs to focus on their cloud service. And I guess I mean that from all aspects. I mean it from a storage standpoint, a la the old iDisk, mm-hmm. to broaden up maybe iCloud a little bit so that we can store some of our data in the cloud with security and access it from all of our mobile devices. Apple Mail or Mail.me or, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, unfortunately, there's a bit of an identity crisis there.
Yep.
But I wish I didn't have to use Google Mail, but I don't feel secure enough with Apple, with its mail service to say this is going to be my primary end all be all service. There's so many opportunities here for photo stream to work right, for video sharing or my video in the clouds to work right, for podcasts and all to sync across. And that one they seem to have, that and calendars, they seem to have done a pretty good job with. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like, you know, this is the way that the world is moving, more into the cloud, less on my desktop. And if Apple's going to be a player, you know, they need to do it. And I'm just not sure that that is completely within their DNA at this point.
Yeah, we talk a lot about sort of how Apple has fallen down a little bit when it comes to the services side of things. And it's interesting you mention it sort of being across the board, because there are a lot of little areas. Another interesting part of this whole conversation to me, though, is that Apple does have some pieces of it, right? I mean, there's lots of sharing and cloud services, but what is your sense of, you know, where the actual fail point is for Apple? I mean, where do you think it's sort of breaking down?
Oh, I hate to say fail point. Okay, so let's not say that.
Well, but sticking point or stumbling point maybe is the better place to way to say it. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, and I guess stumbling point, or maybe just choices that Apple has made that don't seem to be as integrated or with the user in mind. iCloud, for example. You know, I've my documents, my Keynote, my Pages documents open seamlessly in iCloud, and I can open them on, for the most part, on my iOS devices. But those documents are then kind of hidden away in a secret place in the Mac OS,
right?
Instead of just being right out there, you know, in the open. And, you know, man does not live by Pages and Keynote alone. God knows I love them, and they're, you know, far superior choices, in my opinion, to a lot of the other options out there. That said, however, it seems like there's a little bit of confusion a lot of confusion about just yeah. where am I storing these documents, and how do I get to them except from within Keynote and from within Pages? And of course, then we have the sharing issue that seems to be out there all the time of, well, I would like to open up a Keynote PDF, but now exactly where do I need to store that to be able to open it up in Preview or in what program? And, you know, after a while, your head kind of melts down and you just say, I would just put it in the Documents folder and then I'll know where it is. And if I need to share it across to iCloud, well, then, you know, I may even create a duplicate to share to iCloud because I want to be able to find that original document. And it's a very nice conceptual thing that, okay, I really don't need to worry about it as long as I'm working in Keynote. But the fact of the matter is that we all share documents among a lot of different programs for a lot of different reasons. Apple, I think, either needs to get over that or at least address it in some fashion so that we can have access to those documents the way we want. I think it'll just make life so much better. I think they have the capability of doing it. It's just not necessarily in their mindset at this point.
Yeah, I think a key word you mentioned briefly there was integration. In my mind, they seem to have this sort of integration problem. And mentioned this briefly with Ewan Rankin, was what I'm seeing is it seems like on iOS they went, you know, for a lot of reasons, I think a lot of them technical and having to do with sandboxing, they push things a lot further away from a Finder model. And a lot of people have talked for years about Apple needs to do something about the Finder. And so iOS comes out and they sort of create this whole new paradigm of, okay, applications are going to own their documents. They're going to be aware of what they work with. I think, again, some of that was facilitated or forced by the sandboxing piece, but it's this whole new paradigm. So we start to learn that on our iOS devices, but then you've got the Mac OS sitting over here that has the traditional Finder that everybody's really comfortable with, and I know how that works, and I know where my documents are. We had inklings of this when Apple introduced iPhoto in iTunes, which were these sort of applications that manage specific types of files or media, and took a little while for people to learn that, but we still had the Finder sort of running behind all of that. And so now we've got these two sort of opposed methodologies, and I think it gets really confusing with people when they're trying to go across devices and work between these two different areas in terms of managing our files and documents within our applications. And that's where I think Apple has a lot of work to do, and they need to sort of solve this problem. I don't know if I have an answer for them, but sort of bringing those two things back together, and I don't know if it's finding a middle ground or reinventing the paradigm on one end or the other to sort of address these issues. But all I can say is there's something inherently not broken, but just difficult about the system as it exists today.
Well, okay. Let's just talk about one product that at least so far or theoretically may solve part of the problem. Transporter, and I'm intentionally leaving off Dropbox because Dropbox is just too prohibitively expensive. But if you look at Transporter and what they're trying to do, they give me the opportunity to affordably put my documents in the cloud. Okay, it's my own private little cloud, you know.
Right.
But this feels like it has the first opportunity to maybe merge the two, to take my documents folder and, you know, relatively seamlessly put it up there for everyone to see. Everyone being all of my iDevices and anybody I choose to share them with.
Right.
And that, you know, that may seem like a simplification, but I think it's a simplification that people could understand and maybe get behind.
Right.
Because right now we're having to decide what I put on Google Docs or what I put on Dropbox or what I put on SugarSync or, you know, whatever service you prefer.
Right.
And at the end of the day, that just adds to the confusion. It adds to, one version of something overwriting another or not being updated when I need it to be. And that just gets really, really difficult. And again, to bring this full circle, I mean, I'm not sure that I have all the answers. I'm not sure that's the best answer. It just seems like an answer so far. And I really would like to see Apple do something about it. We've got these big server farms that I don't know what they're serving,
right,
at least right now. Maybe that'll become abundantly clear at WWDC. But it just seems like Apple has a great opportunity here to take the lead if they can just get over the fact that everything needs to be done exactly Apple's way. They can't continue to just pretend to exist just in their own little environment.
Yeah, yeah. I'm becoming a big fan of the Transporter as well. You know, they did send me one to play around with, and I like it. The challenge there, though, and I've talked about this a little bit, is integration. And the thing when it comes to your documents and files for me is that it needs to be ubiquitous. Like, I need all my apps to be able to tap into that. And I think that's where the challenge of iCloud is right now, is because it's not, I think you were alluding to this a little bit, it's not in all those third-party apps and integrated the way it needs to be, or I need it to be, so that I can access my documents. And Transporter has a little bit of that challenge. I think, you know, Dropbox, even though we sort of avoided mentioning that one, the one advantage it has right now is it does have so much integration with so many applications. And then on the Finder side of things, at least currently, right, it's right there. I know where those documents are. I can go into the Dropbox folder and I can see. And Transporter has that advantage as well, right? I can go into my Transporter. And for people who don't know what it is, we probably should explain that real quickly. It's an appliance product. It's a network storage device. You hook it up on your Ethernet. It has a hard drive built into it, and it creates your own sort of private cloud. So all your documents live locally on this network attached hard drive, but then it has a lot of the sharing features that you would want with a cloud service. So people are tapping directly into the Transporter that's sitting inside your home. And again, I'm simplifying it a lot, but I think people get the idea from that. But the point is that once I need to access that stuff, I need all of my applications to be able to find that. I need my file system, be it the Finder or whatever I have on iOS, to be able to tap into that. And I need to not have to worry about, you know, where my documents are or how to find those things. And yeah, I think that is something that Apple really needs to address with documents in the cloud, is the ubiquity of it. It's just not there yet in my mind. And I don't know if you feel the same way.
No, I you know, again, it seems like we're, I guess, rehashing. But the fact the fact that I can't open a Pages document and know where it is on my Mac versus where it is on my PC. You know, on my PC, it's great. On my PC. What's wrong?
Personal
with that?
Computer, that's fine.
Yeah, personal computer. No, the fact that I can open it on an iOS device is spectacular. You know, that's exactly where it should be because that's the only real option. But the fact that then if I want to open a PDF in Keynote, well, you know, it just feels like it requires a few gyrations. And, you know, so, I mean, maybe we're talking about, I hate to say it, maybe we're talking about an overhaul of iOS mm-hmm. to allow this, you know, and again, I don't want to cheat and do two topics, but maybe iOS needs to be overhauled in favor of a cloud architecture.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was saying earlier, I think you can approach this from a couple different directions, right? You can fix it on the Mac side. You can address it on the iPad iOS side. At the very least, you need to address the whole cloud part of this, because I think that's a big portion of it. Just to take it in another quick direction before we close up, something that Bart Bouchatz had brought up somewhat related to this is, you know, he wanted to see a little bit of improvement in the iWork applications and the iLife applications, specifically in compatibility. So because you mentioned you're working with Keynote and Pages and moving documents back and forth between iOS, are you seeing that as an area too? Specifically, he mentioned this thing where you're kind of limited on the iOS side in terms of compatibility with your documents, right? If the Pages document isn't using the right fonts or your Keynote doesn't have sort of the right template in it, you get those warnings and error messages. So I don't know if you encounter that or has that been working for you sort of as it exists today?
That's okay. I can kind of live with that. I guess it would be nice to have some kind of package file that would wrap up all your fonts and everything. Yeah. But I don't find that as big an issue as the fact that if I create, if I create on the Mac at certain aspect ratios, then I have trouble displaying them on a big screen TV from my iPad at other aspect ratios.
Yeah.
And that's a much, much bigger problem for me. If I can create on one, then I should be able to display on the other. You know, that is a real big issue.
Yeah,
because that means every time I have to think about, you know, I have to think about where I'm creating, where I'm going to display. And sometimes you don't always know, you know, where that's going to be. So
yeah, you have most often you don't, right? You don't know what projector they're going to have or what display device they're going to have and what resolution. You know, is it VGA, XVGA? Is it HD? Do I have HD? You know, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I almost have to go to the lowest common denominator and say, okay, this is what I'm going to create for. And, you know, that's going to be it. So that to me is a bigger issue challenge.
Interesting.
You know, and it's not a killer, but it's just not the way Apple typically works. And so that's another thing that I would like to see, you know, if that's not nearly as big as the cloud, but
right.
Yeah, if I had to pick something, that would be my issue with Pages and Keynote.
The iWork with documents or applications. Well, cool. Yeah. Hey, thanks, Chuck. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights on this topic. If people want to check out what you're up to, follow along with what you're doing, where should they go?
MacVoices.com is where you'll find everything I'm doing now, and on Twitter at Chuck Joyner.
Great. Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you, Adam.
So now I have Ewan Rankin from the British Tech Network. They do shows on general tech, gaming, Mac, and media. A little mini empire you got going there, right, Ewan?
Not exactly. It's just a group of people who, it's kind of swelled over the last 5 years, but it's just a group of people who like talking about tech. It's kind of like a telephone conversation that you can eavesdrop on, really.
Yeah, but I admire you because you do video, and that's beyond what I'm willing to do.
Do videos a bit in quotes, really, because some weeks we do, some weeks we don't.
Depends on how the tech works out. But you're kind enough to have me once a month too on your Mac show over there on the British Tech Network. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome, mate. You add a clarity and credibility that we otherwise would lack.
Well, so what we're doing now is I'm talking to everybody, finding out, you know, if we were in charge of Apple, if we could go out there and we'd be running the engineers up to WWDC, what would you have had them working on?
Blimey. I think that's a tough one because, you know, they've got all of those issues going on with pulling people backwards and forwards between the two OSs. So you kind of get the feeling that there's a lot that's going to be left out. But my real desire would be to see an upgrade to iLife. I think iLife is desperate of a good hacking about. DVD manufacturing's got to go out of it for a start, even if they just do some upgrades to the existing stuff that's in the App Store. I think they still need to have some kind of web development present. iWeb never did it, so that would be really nice to see a web development package that worked, that the kind of really easy level, kind of like Muse is doing for Adobe at the moment. I'd really like to see that. The other thing that I think is becoming completely and utterly irrelevant at the moment rapidly is Finder. There's a lot of creaks and groans in Finder. There's more that needs to happen. Pathfinder's definitely overtaken it in terms of flexibility and usage. To a large extent, I find Windows Explorer a lot more intuitive than I find Finder sometimes. And just this week, I had an old card kicking about with some photos on that I couldn't figure out what to do with it because I hadn't got the software to get it off the camera and I hadn't got a card reader to read that. I'm not going to buy a new card reader for an obsolete card that I don't use anymore. And lo and behold, it turns out Preview can import RAW files from any camera that's attached. And I'm not talking about actually importing the RAW file, not open it in Preview. It physically imports it and sticks it in Finder for you, which I had no clue it even did that. So that kind of struck home to me that Finder's a little bit irrelevant. So I would love to see an upgrade to Finder, definitely, and I'd like to see iLife done. And the other one, I suppose, is iCal, because iCal really is kind of woeful at times. Mail app's got a lot better, but iCal really still suffers, and contacts as well. That kind of looks a bit tired for me, I think.
So you have some stuff, it sounds like a lot of software stuff. You mentioned a few things there, Finder and the contact and calendar management, as well as the iLife suite. So specifically in the iLife suite, it's interesting you bring up the whole web thing, because Apple seems to really have abandoned that in terms of iWeb and said that's not something we're doing. But you think that's an important part of the suite?
I don't think it's an important part for them because they don't make any money out of it, and that's the real crux of the issue. They'd have to put a lot of development time in to get virtually nothing back, so it really is a bit pie in the sky for me. But I think in terms of the fact that they're selling a lot of iOS devices, that is then the drug sale in for OS X and a desktop, in inverted commas, Mac, whether it's a laptop, an Air, or a Mac Mini, to have something where you could start doing web publishing, and then it would integrate with outputs from your iOS device, and then maybe an even API that would get you into things like Vimeo or Video Find Me or any of those. What's the... Mm-hmm. One that begins with V, the little 6-second job.
Vine. The new one Twitter just bought, yeah.
Yeah, I think something that would give you an API that would integrate that and allow it to embed would be really nice, and I think that would be something that would be a good service from them. But I've got to admit, it's going to be hard to see where the dollar's coming from.
Well, I think, you know, I think you're hitting on something too, is that they really, when they pulled that stuff away, there's certain things that consumers want to do, right? You want to be able to share your videos easily. You want to be able to share your photos easily. And sort of integrating with a third-party service is fine, you know, going to like a YouTube like they have now. But what they had when they had iWeb was they had this easy ability for me to build just sort of a private website that I could share my stuff on, that I could give to my family and friends, and I didn't have to worry about it. It was like a one-button sort of publishing thing. It's like, oh, you want to create a page. And they've brought that back a little bit. I mean, if you get on iOS, you get the, what do they call them, journals now? But I don't know anybody that uses them because they're kind of so buried down there that a lot of people don't even realize that feature's there. Once they discover it, it's kind of a cool, neat feature, even like the shared photo streams. But they have it's all disjointed, right? That's what I get, is like they don't have a cohesive thing to say, okay, we're going to push all the stuff you want to share online into iWeb, and hey, you can build this little mini sort of portal for everybody to kind of access the stuff you want to share wherever you want to share it from.
That's interesting coming from you as someone who's web competent.
Right.
Is, you know, even as a web competent person, you want somewhere that's drag and drop. You want somewhere that's got a built-in framework that's already up there. And the purists will go, well, it doesn't return well in Google search results and there's no sitemap and all that kind of stuff. Who gives a stuff? You want somewhere to drag half a dozen photos, press publish, and everyone can get to see them.
Right, yeah. Just send somebody a link and they don't have to worry about it, right? You don't have to send, oh, well, if you want to see my videos, you got to go to my YouTube page. If you want to see my photos, well, you can go over to Flickr or I've got, you know, the shared photo streamer. If you want, you know, it's a lot of disjointed stuff. So there's a lot of pieces in there across the software platform. And I think, from my perspective, that's what I want to see them pull together. So I'm with you on, like, they really need to figure this stuff out. The Finder thing that you brought up is the same sort of way. You know, this idea that you had to go into a separate application, which is also an Apple application, to figure out that photo import. Why isn't that all cohesive and a little more seamless? They've got Image Capture is another great tool. Ooh. That's included in everybody's Mac. You can do amazing stuff with that. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, you can, like, scan into that stuff. You can read off card readers in Image Capture. But why is that so sort of hidden, and why isn't it just immediately intuitive within something like a reimagined Finder? And I'm a big Pathfinder fan as well. So on the Finder side, are there some other specific things you could think of that would just make it better, or that, you know, you've run across and you're like, oh, this is in Pathfinder. If this was just built in, this would be a lot better experience for me.
I mean, I work with image files an awful lot, being a photographer, and right. The beauty of having a pro level camera when I had the 1DX Mark II was as my main body camera for shooting and doing a lot of stills, was that all of the file references were unique. I think it was something ridiculous like a 500,000 repeat. Mm-hmm. So it was YRX001, and you go all the way through the thousands of that, and then it would turn it to YRY or something like that. So the file referencing was very much easier to find unique images. Now I've gone to a 6D, which is great, and it shoots better video and that kind of stuff. Well, it shoots video full stop. But the problem I've got is they've gone back to the IMG system, which is a 1,000 image wraparound.
Right.
And now there's no uniqueness. And the one thing that you get with Windows Explorer, which always really impressed me when I saw it, was if you had two duplicate files, it would sit there and say, right, okay, these two are duplicates, which one do you want to keep? And it'd show you a little thumbnail of the one that you wanted to keep. And you could say, I'll keep this one, I'll keep both. But the other thing is that Finder gets to a point where it finds a problem and it stops. And you set up a whole load of image transfers and it finds a duplicate. And then it goes, no, need you to decide what to do with this one file before I'm willing to go any further. And you come down in the morning, you're like, oh, my God. And I've got that, and I've got to go out. And it just seems so backward as something which is so crucial within OS X. You know, that the file management system is everything about what your OS provides over and above all the other things that you can buy elsewhere. And Pathfinder is something you can buy elsewhere and does a damn sight better job.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then they have the flip side problem that is something that I'm hoping they're working on too, is with iOS, you know, they've taken almost this exact opposite weird approach where, you know, and I get it, your documents own your files and it works on iOS, and they've tried to bring that into Mountain Lion and it sort of works in Apple's apps, but with iCloud being broken, it's just, again, just disjointed and kind of disconnected, and I think it really confuses people. I tried to explain the new iCloud file system to my Mac user group. It was like a nightmare. It's just like you're looking at people, and I'm confused explaining it, and so how's a consumer supposed to figure out how to use this? So I think that's certainly something they need to address. I don't know if they need to pull one back, you know, more toward a Finder-like thing, or push the Finder more toward the iOS thing. I think there's probably some common ground in the middle, but I don't know if I have the answer, because I'm not entirely certain what Apple's trying to do when it comes to the file system.
No, I agree absolutely. I don't think it knows itself, which is one of those problems.
Well, very cool. Last thing you touched on was sort of the calendar contacts thing. That's one place where I've always felt, at least between iOS and the Mac, it's worked fairly well for me. But I will admit that on the calendar side, I'm a BusyCal user. I don't know if if you are as well, or if you've stuck with the built-in calendar. But what are some of the things you're thinking of there in terms of just features, or what would make your life easier?
I think the built-in calendar system does well for a solo person doing a solo thing, running one calendar. Integration with Google Calendar can be a real problem with multiple device access and it dropping off constantly, but that's good more than it is OS X's. I think things like I've got customers who want to arrange a meeting, so they send me an invitation for a meeting request in Outlook, and there's just absolutely, I mean, why in this day and age we can't get Outlook and iCal to work in sync on invitations is beyond me. That seems like it's the easiest of easy things to do, and it never works properly. Every time I click yes and say I'm going to accept, they say you didn't accept. I can't raise a request for an invitation for anyone that's using Outlook because it just ignores it completely. And I just find that a bit backward, a bit dark ages where we can.
Yeah, they need to get together with Microsoft and certainly solve that problem. I think part of that, of course, is the whole standards issue. Apple and Google have kind of gone with the CalDAV thing, so I think it works a little bit better on that side. But your point is very well taken. I've struggled with the same sorts of things. You know, it's like calendar just needs to work. It's interesting you mentioned the sharing thing, too, because I think that's another thing where Apple needs to address in a number of areas. I mean, calendar is one example, and that's part of the reason why I use BusyCal is I can share my calendar with my wife over our local network. But what doesn't work really well there, and I'm hoping Apple will address at some point, is if we want to share across our iOS devices, and if I want to sync that stuff, it now has to go through the iCloud service, and that means that she has to have her own iCloud account. You know, for the longest time we didn't have separate accounts, and now we've had to set those up, and then we got to set up sharing on the server side, and now I've got two kinds of sharing that I sort of have to manage, and it's just, yeah, it's one of those things. It's a mess. It's like, why isn't it easier for two people to share calendars and have maybe different levels of permissions where I can share calendars maybe with a client that I'm working with a project on, and you know, they can have visibility to see what's going on and edit those things, and then with my wife I can share this calendar and we can each edit those sorts of things and keep each other up to date. That's never quite worked well. So I'm with you, you know, I think on that side of things, the calendar could use a little bit of attention.
Yeah, I think contacts has improved an awful lot in the last sort of 18 months to 2 years, in that you know, there's an awful lot more of when you type your first three letters of the surname or the Christian name, you get choices, and they're usually pretty accurate as well. So you know, 2 years ago, you'd have found me harping on about an integrated application for calendar, email and
contacts. Yeah,
I'm not as worried about them being integrated anymore, but there's certain functionality issues I really do want kind of straightened out. I think the other point that you made there about cloud is really important. Apple has got an opportunity here. It's trying to sell its iCloud service and sell you extra space on that because it makes a good profit on it. And that's where the money can come from an iWeb-like application. There's so many places now that if you want to view content, all they want to do is sell you the opportunity to view content based on them receiving your details, some kind of email address, some sign, and you have to log in, you have to be a member of this site. And I think Apple could say, well, no, we're not going to do that. You guys have got your photos. You're not trying to be a Flickr user. You're not a power user. You're not a professional photographer putting 1,000 images a month up. You buy the web space that you want to use how you want to do what you want with as you want, and we'll give you an application that allow you to put your images, your documents, your PowerPoint presentations, even you know, from Microsoft or Word documents in the cloud, and we'll allow you to access it. And then the walled garden grows a little bit there. I think there's a great opportunity within that, and that could be. I think they're missing a bit of a trick there.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree with you. Well, I want to say thanks for coming on and sharing your thoughts and ideas on this. If people want to see what you're up to, follow along with your network and stuff like that, where should they go?
Well, they can get me on Twitter at Ewan Rankin. I'll tell them everything that we're doing as we do it. We've also got BritishTechNetwork.com, which is where all the shows are. We've got Gamer Show, iOS Show, we've got a Mac Show, a Big Show, which is a general tech show, photography shows, and a media show. You know, we've got loads of stuff on there. And we're having a bash next month in Birmingham. So if you want to come and drink some beer and meet some like-minded people, we've got a good few people coming. We've got a nice, huge venue this year, which is really good. We're expecting up to 100, I think. So,
yep. And I've got a ticket to give away for that. So I'm going to be doing that on a future Mac podcast, so people need to stay tuned for that. If you want to go to that and you're in that area, we'll have a way for you to get a ticket. Or you can just go buy one and support. You still have tickets on sale? Or are you sold out?
Network.com, there's a banner up there, and you can buy a ticket. Tickets are £30. But that's everything. You get all of the fun, all of the entertainment, all of your food, all of your beer. There's nothing to pay on the day.
That's awesome. Well, great. Thanks, Ewan.
Thanks a lot.
Now I have Brian Chaffin, co-founder and co-publisher of the Mac Observer, also co-host of the
Amy.
Apple Context Machine podcast. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hey, Adam, how are you? It's fantastic to be here for the first time.
Yeah, finally getting you on the MacCast, and I apologize for not doing it sooner.
I'm just happy to be here now.
Very cool. Well, I think this is a fun one because, you know, we're trying to find out if we sort of stepped in Tim Cook's shoes and were running Apple for the past year leading up to WWDC, what is that one thing that for you personally, you really are hoping that, you know, Apple is working on and, you know, may or may not announce?
I don't know that there is a specific thing. There are definitely some things that I'm hoping to see, but from the standpoint of the way you're asking that question, the thing that I want to see is the thing to get the Doubting Thomases to shut their traps. So
what would that be?
Well, it's going to be something that shows us that Apple has been innovating behind the scenes. It drives me nuts to have people say, oh my God, it's been 6 months since Apple introduced a product. So therefore they've lost their ability to innovate. I mean, it's just so divorced from any kind of evidence-based reasoning, and it drives me nuts. So I'm wanting, of course, Apple to prove my belief in the company's ability to innovate without Steve Jobs by knocking my socks off. And the kinds of things that could qualify for that would be understanding, of course, that we're not going to see any major new hardware. I think we may get some minor hardware updates at the show, but we're certainly not going to get any new product categories because it's going to be focusing on iOS and OS 10. So from that standpoint,
yeah, right. But I mean, but if you were running the show, that would be your, you know, if this was your WWDC, you'd be hoping that you'd be announcing a product and saying, hey, look, here's what we've been up to, or no?
No, not from a hardware standpoint. I love the idea of WWDC being focused on the software because that's what matters to developers. Right. And I think that this particular show is going to be really important for Apple to show us some improvements and advancements in both operating systems. So from that standpoint, that's what I would be focusing on. What we're expecting is precisely what I would have been focusing on had I been in Tim's shoes. And that's the OS. And for iOS in particular, something game-changing along the lines of a mobile payment system that actually works. My belief has been something that's NFC-based, maybe. My belief is that Apple, that the world, that the industry has been waiting for Apple to show us how to do mobile payments right. And so even though Apple's going to be late to the game on something like mobile payments and NFC, because Android has been there for a long time, that it's going to be Apple's involvement that finally kicks it into gear. I would love, and I don't know if this really qualifies for your question, Adam, because I don't think it's anything they could have been working on for the last year, but I would love to see Apple show us that they have got an answer to Google Now coming up. Mm-hmm. And that may actually be possible. A story that I'm working on today an opinion piece I'm working on today is concerns a rumor that Apple may have bought a company called Grokker that could give Siri the predictive abilities to be able to compete with Google Now, because I think that Google Now right now is the killer app for Android, and I want Apple to be able to compete with it.
Yeah, Google Now is amazing. Even the iOS version, which is severely crippled compared to Android because of the integration issue, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the opposite of anything that Apple It's the opposite of I don't know what I'm trying to say, but it's Google has the ability to integrate Google Now in a way that only Apple has the ability to integrate anything on iOS.
Right. They have the data set. I'd actually talked about this recently on one of my shows before this whole Grokker thing came out. There was a couple pieces, I think, one by Colton Mack and one by Apple Insider, where they were talking about this sort of predictive stuff. And I took it a little bit one step further, because while Google has all that stuff, you know, in the cloud, and they have all this information that they've culled about us, if you're you know, heavily invested in the Google space, Apple has the same thing on the iOS and desktop space, but it's much more contained. But they still have access to that. They know what's in my contacts. They know what's in my email. They know at a local level, which I personally am a lot more comfortable with. Like, they can tap that stuff locally and not necessarily have to go out the cloud. I think for some things, they're still going to have to go out. I think search was one of the things that I brought up as a big missing piece for Apple in that you know, sort of matching Google Now part. But yeah, they could do a lot without that.
I wrote a piece, a couple months ago saying that Apple needed to get into search in part because of the data that it would give the company about our habits. This is definitely a strength that Google has, and it's definitely a strength that Google is able to, you know, Google's been collecting this stuff on us from the get-go, right? They've been profiling us. Everything, every single product that Google has is designed ultimately to get information about us that they can slice and dice and sell.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're finally giving something back in the form of Google Now. Google Now is a great, amazing service. You know, they're finally taking all the stuff that they know about it. You know, all these like really awful, scary things that Eric Schmidt has said about, you know, we know what you're thinking before you do, or better than you do. You know, all those kinds of things. They've known this for a while, but now they're finally giving back. And I just Google Now is really impressive, and Apple is going to have to be able to match it in some way in order to not have Android have this competitive leg up on the company.
Yeah. What's your sense of their ability? I mean, if they implement some things, what's your sense of their ability to actually improve upon what Google's done?
Well, you know, both companies have different strengths, right? Google has both companies have really smart people, and Google's strength, I think, is that they're not as tightly bound as Apple. I think they're a lot more free to explore new directions and see what kind of interesting things come up with that. And that's fine. That is, in fact, a strength for Google. But on the other hand, turn that around on its head, Apple's strength is this incredibly tight focus. And Apple's focus is in making products that we want to use, rather than finding new products that we want to use that they can then collect information about us. You know, it's a slightly different focus. And and I think that Apple can make the more user-friendly product in any given instance, and can also make can design its products and services around what the user needs, as opposed to around what Apple needs, much more effectively and easily than Google can.
Right. What's your take on how they might go about this? Is it something that they need to do and should do purely in house? Does it involve partnerships? Does it involve going, you know, completely out of house?
You mean for matching Google Now?
Yeah, for just creating the kind of service you would envision being, you know, wanting to be the beneficiary of.
Wow. That is a great question, and I wish I were more qualified to answer it. You know, a lot of it has to be in-house, because if Apple is partnering with third-party companies, the other companies can partner with them. You know, there's always that notion of But keeping it in-house gives Apple a proprietary strength.
Right.
But at the same time, everything can't be invented by Apple. Of course, we know that Tim Cook said that Apple's bought 9 companies in the last 8 months.
Very interesting.
Which I think is certainly fascinating. It represents a marked increase in the number of companies that Apple is buying. And they're all relatively small companies. I've always been a fan of Apple's approach of not trying to buy revenue, but rather trying to buy products and people that they can integrate into their own ecosystem, into their own corporate culture. They're going to have to acquire some of this stuff from out of house.
Yeah,
absolutely and positively. And if they need data, if there is external data that they need, that's the kind of stuff I think that they're going to end up having to partner more with. So, for instance, their partnership with Yelp. But you know, I don't think that partnering with Yelp for local search is anywhere near as effective as having access to what people are actually searching for vis-a-vis Google, Google.com. And which again comes back to, I wish Apple would get into search.
Yeah. Yeah. I've thought exactly the same thing. I just don't know where they go for that if they don't either buy something and build it themselves. I mean, Google would be the logical choice. The question is Apple ready at this point? Is Tim Cook ready at this point to swallow that sort of pill?
You want Apple to partner with Google for search?
I'm not implying that, but I question in my mind, where else are they going to go? I mean, Yahoo seems, since it's, you know, sort of restructuring, but you know, that's also,
well, Yahoo
Microsoft
doesn't do search either.
Exactly. They gave that up to what, Microsoft, right? So then it would be Microsoft. So that's what I'm saying, is like, if they what are their choices? They have Google on one side, if they're going to partner, or Microsoft and Bing,
well,
or build something themselves.
I think that when it comes to search, Apple would need and want to build something themselves. I don't think that they want to partner with Microsoft.
Right.
Not just because of the history between the company. I mean, Microsoft is a company with no vision whatsoever. there's no vision at the top of that company. And tying themselves too much to Microsoft's fortunes, that seems extraordinarily risky and doomed to not being good. But here's the thing, you know, it's really difficult for a company like Yahoo to solve the search problem that it suddenly found itself with several years ago. You know, Yahoo is just nowhere near as flexible as a company like Apple is. Apple has the flexibility to develop search from the standpoint of, we don't have to have this in order to make money.
Right.
Apple could put search out there ad free and afford it, making it part of the Apple ecosystem and support that for as long as it wanted.
Right. Right. I think the same thing. I mean, much in the same way, a lot of people, you know, were hypercritical of Apple with maps. But I mean, Apple has created an impressive mapping product in a very short period of time, no matter how you want to slice and dice it. I mean, there were some missteps. And I always felt, and this is just me personally, that, you know, Tim Cook never needed to apologize for maps, but they did. And, you know, I think it's gotten much better very quickly.
It has, and I agree with you. I think that Apple Maps is a very impressive product. The problem with Apple Maps is not Apple Maps, it was the rollout. Uh-huh. If Apple had rolled out Apple Maps as a beta alongside the original iOS app that's powered by Google, and done that for, you know, say a year before you know, let everyone know it was coming.
Right.
And you know, proudly labeled it a beta product, and then switched over, there would have been no problems whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. I find it interesting that nobody seems to want to let Apple do beta products, you know, because Siri is a beta product, and people immediately are hypercritical of that too. So.
Yeah. Well, again, but that was a rollout issue too. And who's the common factor there? Scott Forstall. Yes. Siri was rolled out the same way every other product has been rolled out by Steve Jobs. You know, this is the most magical, glorious thing that we've ever seen. And Siri was a beta product. So was Apple Maps. And it was also rolled out as a, you know, this is the most beautiful, this is the most beautiful thing ever. No mention whatsoever of the fact that, you know, and by the way, we're still building out some of the data. So, you know, give us a little time to make it right. That's not how it was presented to us. It was presented to us as a glorious product ready to go. And then on the, you know, Apple's website, you see that it's in beta. And that was a huge mistake.
Yeah. 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 So getting back to how you started this, I would say you were right on topic with this, by the way. So bringing this topic up was in perfect spirit with what we're trying to do here, because this is what, you know, sort of we want, or what we would want to see at WWDC. So this is absolutely something that I would hope that Apple would come present to us. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not, but
I think it's too early for this Google Now
exactly.
thing.
Exactly.
This Grok, but at the same time, you know, we know that the Grokker app got pulled just recently.
Yeah.
The service went offline yesterday as of this recording. And it's going to be coming back soon. I mean, you know, it's actually possible that we're going to see something here.
We might get hints.
We want to show this to you. We're not ready to roll it yet, but we want to show you what's coming. And that will be really, really interesting. And that on top of the makeover that Johnny Ive has been in charge of, I think it's going to make this a really exciting show.
Yeah. I just want to touch on one last thing before I let you go. So you mentioned the NFC, because this is another thing, or the payment system. This is another area where I think Apple could make a huge impact. And we've heard the little rumors of, you know, fingerprint scanners, and maybe that's tied to this sort of payment system thing. I want to ask you, because personally, I've been sort of thinking that Apple doesn't necessarily need to do NFC, quote unquote, proper. That, you know, I look at what they've done with the Easy Pay that I can use at my iPhone in their stores. And I see that almost as a perfect payment system, where it's tied to my credit card that they already have on file, my iTunes account. And all I do is I walk into a shop and I scan something. I don't know if that's something maybe retailers are ready to adopt or accept, and maybe NFC is an easier sell, but I'm curious to get your take, because you mentioned specifically NFC. I mean, what's your thought on how that would come together?
Well, there are two aspects of the NFC thing. The one aspect is the geek aspect, and that's the ability for me to set up NFC tags, you know, in my home, in my car, and in my office. Of course, I actually work out of my house, but, you know, for everybody else, and have location based reminders, location based events, location based syncing, location based all sorts of stuff. That's the geek side, and that's fun, and that's something that Android already has. No one really uses it all that much. The vast majority of people don't use it all that much,
right?
But it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that, because I think that that's cool, but I recognize the fact that that's that geek side.
Right.
The more commercial aspect of NFC is the notion of being able to do payments tied to NFC payment devices that are at the retailers. Google has already been doing this.
Right.
Not that many people use it yet.
Right.
So, I think it's because the entire world, certainly the finance industry, has been waiting for Apple to show us how to actually do it right. So I think that would be a big component for making this stuff actually work.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to see it with the next iPhone.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to that as well. So, hey, Brian, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts on this topic with us. If people want to follow along with your writing, what you're up to, the podcast and stuff like that, where should they go? What should they check out?
The podcast, the Apple Context Machine, that I do with Jeff Gamet, is at MacObserver.com/ACM. Does that work currently?
Yes.
Excellent. That's really good. And I also have a personal blog at geektells.com, and I write every day at MacObserver.com.
Great. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
So there you go. That is our thoughts on where we think Apple should be moving, the things they should sort of be working on moving forward, and maybe a little bit of what we think that we might see at WWDC on Monday. But we're going to know in just a couple days, so I am looking forward to seeing what Apple's been up to. I think we're going to get some great glimpses at least the next generation of the operating systems. There's also some rumors that we're going to get some new MacBook Pros, so maybe we'll even get some new hardware thrown in there. I think it's going to be a little while longer on the iOS devices, iPhone 5 and new iPod touches and all those fun things. I think we're going to be seeing new iPads as well, seeing later in the year in the fall, as Tim Cook has already alluded to. But if you have any feedback on any of this stuff, if you have your thoughts on and predictions, please share those. Send email to maccast@gmail.com. But for now, before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors: Smile Software, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, also Text Expander Touch for your iPhone and your iPad, as well as PDF Pen for the iPhone and iPad. You can find information on all their software over at smilesoftware.com. GoToMeeting by Citrix. You can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code MACCAST. Gazelle, it's the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, MacBook, Samsung Galaxy S, or other smartphone is worth by going to gazelle.com. Squarespace, the beautiful and intuitive website publishing platform that allows anyone to create a professional web page, blog, online store, and gallery all on a single platform. You can try it free, no credit card required. Just go to squarespace.com and use my code MACCAST6. Plus, when you purchase a new account, you can also get 10% off with that same code MACCAST6. Just enter that in on the website when you place your order. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. And ShareFile by Citrix. Take all the hassle out of sending and sharing your business files via old methods like email attachments and FTP with ShareFile. You can try it risk-free for 30 days. Just go to ShareFile.com, click on the radio microphone, and enter my offer code MACCAST. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MACCAST. Couple last few things that I want to remind you about. I told you last time about App Camp for Girls. That's a project that Jean McDonald from Smile is setting up. It is a great effort and something that she's trying to get off the ground. They're running a camp to teach app development to girls, and they're using women instructors and volunteers who work in the industry to help inspire young girls to get motivated about possibly pursuing careers in software development and technology. And they're starting out in Portland, where Jean is, but they really want to expand the program. They need some funding for the first year. They've started an Indiegogo fundraiser. They've already earned, last time I checked, I think they were well over the 35,000 mark. They're trying to raise 50,000 to cover the cost for everything they need. That includes legal stuff. They need some advice there, marketing, the equipment, everything they need to run the program for the first year. And then hopefully it'll expand, the movement will take off, and it'll go global at some point. But they could use your help. If you can donate $5, $10, anything, just go check out the project. I'll have a link in the show notes at maccast.com. I think it's an amazing thing that she's doing, and I really want to support that, and I think we as a community need to support that. And then also, I am giving away a Transporter. I'm working with Connected Data, the makers of Transporter. It's a personal cloud storage product. If you haven't checked it out, you should go over to their website at filetransporter.com and get all the information. But they just released a big new update to their software, or they're going to release an update to their software. And to kick things off, they're offering MacCast listeners a chance to win a Transporter. In the new version of the software, they've taken a lot of the user feedback they got from version one, and they've simplified the interface. It has drag and drop and right click support, so you'll be able to right click and get a link to share a file. They're also rolling in more flexible syncing options and a brand new version of their mobile apps, both for iOS and Android. It's really pretty cool. They're actually going to be a sponsor of the MacCast in July. And this contest is open to anyone in the US, Canada, and also all of Europe. So you need to enter by midnight Pacific time on June 15th, but just go to filetransporter.com/V2MacCast, all one word. That's V, the number 2, MacCast, filetransporter.com/V2MacCast to sign up for that contest. And they're giving away a Transporter to a MacCast listener. So this is just MacCast listeners in this contest. So go sign up there. And a big thank you to them for making that Transporter available to our community. And that'll do it for this episode. If you have any feedback for me, you have a comment, a question you want to add to this conversation we've been having about the future of Apple and what sorts of things we think they should be working on, you can send those to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM9, leave voicemail there. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those at maccast.com. Just look for the show post and find the link that says show notes in HTML. We also have show notes in OPML format if you want to import those into your favorite outliner. And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast, or check out the MacCast Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMacCast. And I'm also on Instagram and Google+. It's pretty much MacCast all over the place. So if you just find me online, you can see what I'm up to between shows. I'm actually going to be on vacation, as I mentioned, for the next week. So no show next week, but I will be posting updates probably to Instagram and the Facebook feed and Twitter and stuff like that if you want to follow along with what I'm up to. But I will see you in about a week. And for now, that'll do it. Take care, and I will talk to you all again real soon.